Small business owners are always passionate about their work, and they have a lot on the line. Let Verizon help champion your small business dream. Whether you own a small business or scaling one or starting one from scratch, you need Verizon Small Business Days. From April 22nd through April 28th, you can partner with Verizon Business Experts for small business support. During Verizon Small Business Days, you can receive a free tech check with a one-on-one meeting with a Verizon Business Expert. Plus, Verizon Business Experts will provide you with personalized advice and solutions that are tailored to your specific small business needs. Take advantage of special offers and deals during Verizon Small Business Days and get more for your business. Verizon has your back. Don't miss out. Book an appointment today. Just call 1-800-483-4428 or go to verizon.com/smallbusiness.
Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones, from powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY, a big idea that inspired the world to invest differently, and still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
My mission is simple, to make you money. I'm here to level the playing field for all investors. There's always a bull market somewhere, and I promise to help you find it. Mad Money starts now.
Hey, I'm Cramer. Welcome to Mad Money. Welcome to Cramer. I'll be with my friends. I was trying to make you a little money. My job, not just to entertain, but to educate, do some teaching. Call me, 1-800-743-CBC. Tweet me at Jim Cramer. Another day, another softer economic number, another step closer to the Fed no longer being your enemy. After this cooler than expected consumer price index reading we got at 8:30 a.m., it's now clear that Jay Powell, the Fed chief, is actually winning the war on inflation, which is why the Dow jumped 217 points today, S&P gained 0.34%, and the NASDAQ advanced another 0.64%. That was on the sixth straight month of better inflation numbers. So on the eve of earnings season, we can stop worrying about the big picture and talk about what makes individual stocks go higher. Why don't we start with the basics? Tomorrow we'll hear from most of the big banks. They'll unleash a slew of numbers. Most of them will be actually irrelevant to the stocks, but not all of them. What do we care about? Loan growth, defaults, how much money they're making off your deposits. They're paying you nothing. They're getting 3-4%. We'll see a set of headline numbers, the earnings, the revenues, the forecasts. It'll look simple, but it's never simple with the banks. And their numbers are often impacted by an amalgam of one-time considerations, which throws off our ability to make clean apples-to-apples comparisons with the analyst estimates. Now, most of the time, the bank stocks instantly go higher, or at least most bank stocks. And then we listen to the conference call, the tone, the refinement of the forecast, the question and answers. And then what happens? They give up their gains. Probably happen again tomorrow. We'll also be hearing from BlackRock's Larry Fink. Now, he's the man behind the biggest asset gatherer in the world. He is a titan and a great advocate of your rights, shareholders' rights, shareholder democracy. And that's something I'm going to be talking about with him tomorrow on Squawk on the Street. Which brings me to what I really want to talk about tonight. Oh, I could give you a couple of NASDAQ stocks that are up. Everybody know how to do that, right? Oh, hey, look at that semiconductor. No, I want to do a little more. I feel like doing a little more tonight. I want to talk about democracy in the case of the Walt Disney Company. First, let me tell you, like anyone who bought Disney last year, I would say I'm plenty upset. And this is for my charitable trust. We've lost a lot of money on a situation that I felt very bullish about, and I was wrong. I've liked Disney forever, though. I've been to Disney World a dozen times. I brought my kids up on Disney movies. I can't live without ESPN. Disney stock is the first stock I recommended on Mad Money almost 18 years ago. So I'm neither a summer soldier nor a sunshine patriot. So when it comes to Disney's recent performance, believe me when I say that I am furious. This company has not done a good job. It's canceled its dividend. It's lost billions, squandering a stunning amount of shareholder money. Let me repeat. Shareholder money. Like my money, or at least my trust, like your money. You see, like other publicly traded companies, Disney's actually owned by the shareholders, who give their trust to the CEO and the board of directors to do a great job with their money. And, well, at least that's supposed how it works. But some chief executives don't seem to recognize that they're accountable to anyone. Some boards don't think so either. Now, that, you know, when I, that doesn't really bother me all that much when the stock's doing well, unless we discover some sort of like truly awful criminal enterprise. But when the stock's doing poorly, I think management loses that right to be treated with the congenial, hail fellow, well-met attitude that I have, that kind of Jeffersonian Gandhi thing I do. And when the company loses fortunes, like Disney did when they surprised us with $4 billion loss for its direct-to-consumer product last year, more than double the previous year's loss, you know what? I don't wear gloves, but I'd take them off if I had them on. I'm not going to just throw the towel and walk away. Management point blank has done a terrible job here. Bob Chapek, the CEO, was fired for his mismanagement, and the board brought back Bob Iger's predecessor, tried to restore order. They also named board member Mark Parker, the fantastic chairman and former CEO of Nike, as the new Disney chairman. Now, it's true that Disney's doing badly, but some of its problems had nothing to do with the deposed Chapek, who was picked by Iger in the first place. Remember, they spent $71 billion buying Fox's entertainment assets. That was a colossal overpay that ruined the balance sheet.
The House of Pain.
Reckless use of shareholder money, your money, my trust money. Sure, hindsight's 2020, Disney had wanted Fox to augment its new streaming service. But like a general manager who spends way too much on a single, player, well, look at that. I missed the water. Bob Iger needs to be held accountable. Believe me, if Disney were a football team, every ESPN analyst would say that whoever was involved with the Fox acquisition deserves to be fired. Something Disney should know because, well, they own most of ESPN. That's not cruel. I'm not being mean. Here's what I'm really doing. I am stating what I call facts. Those are facts. Then not long ago, with Disney stock trading not far from its lows, a well-known activist investor, a guy named Nelson Peltz, he took about a $900 million position in the company. It's not chump change. He, like every shareholder, was unhappy with the company's performance, didn't think that Chapek was doing a good job. Again, obvious. Peltz asked to be put on the board to help the company perform better. In November, when Chapek was fired and Iger returned, many thought that Peltz would be appeased, let Iger bring back the magic. The magic. Peltz wasn't appeased. Now he's going to be thrilled with the team that bought Fox? What he says was $30 billion more than what it was worth? He's supposed to like that? Now, here's what's key. Peltz runs a hedge fund, Trian Partners. When Peltz joins the board of a Trian position, as long as he's on the board, the company tends to outperform the S&P 500 by 9 percentage points in any given year. 9 percentage points. The CEOs of the companies he has helped have given him glowing testimonials, even the ones like Heinz and Procter & Gamble, where he had waged proxy fights to get on the board. During the time he's been on the boards, he's helped increase investments to drive sales growth and market share performance, reduce cost and overhead, and optimize capital allocation decisions, all of which are things that Disney could use. Which is why I found it so confounding that Disney's board has given Peltz a definitive no, despite how poorly the company's performing. They gave him a token 45 minutes to make a presentation. Originally, it was only supposed to be 30 minutes. Peltz pleaded for another 15. And then shortly after, they said, no, thanks. We don't need you on our board. They told him he could observe things, kind of like auditing a class at college. But his $900 million skin in the game position seems to mean nothing to them, nor does his wisdom. I'm obviously actually trying to be as dispassionate as possible about this, but I don't understand why Disney wouldn't eagerly welcome basically free advice from someone with a tremendous track record when he's on the board. I've done my own reporting on this and found many directors who've served with him. They all say the same thing. He's thoughtful, helpful, not disruptive. If you're going to have an activist shareholder coming after you, Peltz is the one you want. So now lots of money, your money, if you're a shareholder, like my travel trust, will be spent to stop Nelson Peltz from joining the board. Boy, is that nuts. Even though he's not the guy who was involved with the disastrous Fox acquisition, or the disastrous choice to make Bob Chapek the CEO. Sure, Disney will have its excuses, just like P&G did when they fought against Peltz. CEO even came on the show to campaign against him on their proxy contest. They tell you all sorts of stories about how it'll hurt the culture, disrupt the boardroom, whatever. But you know what? We're the shareholders, and the shareholders are the ones who own Disney. It's the board, the stewards, who haven't done a good job. Not the shareholders, and not Peltz. Peltz. Now someone like Peltz has been tremendously successful, wants to join them. And they act like that's a problem? That is lunacy. Here's the bottom line. We're not talking about naming Dopey or Sleepy or Scrooge McDuck, one of my faves, or Pluto or the Teacup or the Sultan or the Beast or the Little Mermaid to Disney's board. Talk about electing someone named Nelson Peltz, who can and will help. Hopefully the existing board members who caused Disney to lose so much value won't prevail in arguing against taking it. Let's go to Ira in Texas. Ira.
Yes, how you doing? Thanks for taking the call. You've always mentioned take companies that have good products or good services. Last week, your analyst talked favorably about healthcare management companies. What's your read on Teladoc? They're in that telemedicine space.
Well, excuse me, my problem with Teladoc is that they have not fulfilled, they made a really bad merger, frankly. And when they did that merger, that blew them up. I don't want to touch it. I think there are a lot better ideas out there. Bob in Indiana, Bob.
Hey, what's up, Jim?
Not much, Bob. How about you?
Pretty good. Just waiting to go into work.
All right.
I diversified my portfolio with Mullen. I bought that around 19 cents. I sold out of Apple to get there. But with my Amazon, I sold out of there, and I bought roughly 750 shares at $1.60 approximately on Bed Bath & Beyond. And I'm deciding whether or not if I should
go ahead. Here's what I think you should do. Here's what I think you should do. Bed Bath & Beyond has said that it's worried about being a going concern. What that means is that they could shut, they could close, they could sell. But the main thing you need to know is that you have a cost basis that you can take out. You let the rest run, that's fine with me. But I don't want you to lose money in this. This thing could go to zero, and you'll say, why didn't I take anything out? Take out your cost basis tomorrow, let the rest run, and see how you do, and I think you'll be fine. All right. Hopefully the existing board members who caused Disney to lose so much value won't prevail in arguing against Nelson Peltz's help. On Mad Money tonight, Denbury has a handle on all things carbon capture. So could the stock be an under-the-radar green energy play that's also highly profitable? I'm talking to the CEO. Then over the last couple of months, a phenomenon has swept Wall Street. Former CEOs returning to right the ship. So what should you make of these high-profile power transfers? I'll give you my take. And could the latest COVID numbers out of China be a worry 3 years after COVID initially made it to our shores? I'm getting the latest from the one and only Dr. Eric Topol, and you won't like it. So stay with Cramer.
Don't miss a second of Mad Money. Follow at Jim Cramer on Twitter. Have a question? Tweet Cramer. Hashtag Mad Tweets. Send Jim an email to madmoney@cnbc.com or give us a call at 1-800-743-CNBC. Miss something? Head to madmoney.cnbc.com.
When you're hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging to connect with candidates faster. Plus, 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Mad Money. Just go to Indeed.com/Mad Money right now and support this show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Mad Money. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Unlike most prognosticators, I'm bullish on energy for 2023. The oil and gas stocks won't roar like they did last year, but if you identify the best individual stories in the group, you know what? You're going to do real good. With that in mind, I want to talk about Denbury. That's an independent oil producer that has a long history of using carbon dioxide to get crude out of the ground, a process they call enhanced soil recovery. And in recent years, they've used that expertise to make a huge push into something that they always use the initials for, which they didn't. Everybody does. Carbon capture, utilization, and storage, CCUS. the kind of technology that lets you use fossil fuels without flooding the environment with greenhouse emissions. There was a lot of money earmarked for carbon capture in last year's misleadingly named Inflation Reduction Act. Should have been called the Carbon Reduction Act. Now, all sorts of companies are, they're talking a big game. There's one that's really doing it. It's Denbury. And we got to figure out how they're going to get this carbon footprint down. They're working, and others are going to need their help. Same time, because it's also an oil producer, this is a rare green energy play, highly profitable. Don't take it from me. Let's check in with pure joy, as far as I'm concerned, because I love energy. Chris Kendall, the president and CEO of Denbury, to get a better read on this story. Mr. Kendall, welcome back to Mad Money.
Thanks, Jim. Great to be here again.
So, Chris, it seems like that some things are really happening. It seems like, for instance, you're starting to get your due for what you're doing, which is amazing. And even Washington's noticing.
Absolutely, Jim. I think we are. You know, I think back on when we first visited back in August 2 years ago, we were just getting started. And since then, we have built this business. Ended last year with orders of about 20 million ton per year of emissions that'll be captured and then transported and stored by Denbury. You know, I think about that in just the context of the world's total captured emissions right now, which is about 40 million tons. We're making great progress. There's a long way to go, but we love where we are and we love where we're headed.
Now, talk about what the Inflation Reduction Act has done, because they've really put some pretty good pricing in that could really maybe get others to work with you to get things done.
They really did, Jim. And it's been just a fantastic couple of years in terms of the whole panorama for carbon capture. We started with the original 45Q tax credit, which provided a $50 per ton tax credit for carbon captured and sequestered underground. That was great because that got us a great start with a bunch of low cost to capture industries like ammonia, methanol, ethanol, and so on. And so that's where we started, and that's where we began going down this path. What's really cool is that once we saw the IRA and we saw that $50 tax credit increase to $85 a ton. Now, what that did, especially when you combine it with continued work to just reduce the cost of capture, is it brings a whole bunch of new industry into the money, say, in capturing their emissions. And these are industries with very hard to abate emissions like cement or steel or even power generation, which is for us kind of the holy grail of getting to the meat of the huge amount of emissions that we have right here in the United States. So we're very excited about it. We think the door is just wide open for a very, very big industry and a big business here.
But at the same time, I want people to know this is not, you are not some company that is an ESG company that also produces energy. You are a huge cash flow. You're producing a lot of oil. And frankly, your model is very reasonable for others to emulate.
You know, Jim, I think it really is. If you look back in our history, as you mentioned at the outset, we began with a focus on enhanced oil recovery using carbon dioxide. And what that resulted in is just this great set of experts in handling CO2 above and below ground. It resulted in these assets that are the greatest set of CO2 pipeline assets in the United States, moving 14 million tons of CO2 right now as we speak every year. And so we, through that business, we built this incredible expertise, incredible asset base. And what I love is just the absolute adjacency of carbon capture to that EOR business. All of the expertise that we need to work in CCUS is expertise that we developed right there working EOR. Well, so we have an ongoing business, we have good cash flows, and we can translate all of that to fund and build that CCUS.
All right,
business.
So let's talk about for a moment, it can be idle and you can dismiss it, but there's a company, Exxon, that my partner David Faber did a tremendous takeout on. They are trying their best to be able to become cleaner, to decarbonize. The natural partner for them to do it is Denbury. You do work together. What do we say about this technology and maybe that Exxon needs to buy you in order to get it?
Yeah, and you mentioned that when we talked a couple of Augusts ago. And certainly we think we have something very special, Jim. But when I step back a little bit and I look at what we need as a company, we have the assets, we have the people, we have a clean balance sheet with virtually no debt, and we have the ability to self-fund that $1.6 to $2 billion of CCUS CapEx that we think we'll need to build our business to where we expect it to be by the end of this decade. We can do all of that organically. So we feel very good about where we are. We're completely focused on building the value of this company as we go forward, just as we have over the last couple of years. And that's where we're going to stay focused. That's kind of how I think about it, Jim.
All right. Well, you know what? Look, we're going to have to stay focused because the Gulf Coast where you are is good. We need to even talk about all the companies that need you in order to be able to become better citizens. And then green you know, hydrogen has been such an important part of what we talk about. You guys take action on all of these. I want you to come back. I want you to come to New York. I want people to understand that Denbury deserves a lot more credit for what you're doing than people realize. I want to thank Chris Kendall, CEO of Denbury, Sybil DN. Chris, yes, just keep doing what you're doing. Let's just hope everybody emulates your work, okay?
We're going to do it, Jim. Thank you so much.
I believe you are. You're a darn good stock, too. Mad Money's back after the break.
Coming up, just when you thought they were out, they pulled themselves back in.
The spirit of performance defines Acura, and now it's electric. Introducing the all-electric ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. While what powers their cars may change, the energy that makes Acura never will. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system and up to 313-mile range on a single charge, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is everything they said electric could never be. It was built with the driver in mind, just like Acura's been doing since the beginning. We could talk all day, but the only way to experience this electric performance is to drive it yourself. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It's packed with benefits to help unlock more value from your business purchases. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
These CEOs all return to the corner office. What's it mean for their stocks? Next.
Over the past few months, we've seen something a little unusual. In order to turn things around, a handful of companies have booted their CEOs and replaced them with former CEOs or founders. It's like Wall Street's taking a page from Poltergeist 2. They're back. By the way, that's a seminal set of horror movies if you're too young to have seen them. But even if you don't like retro movies, the business community clearly has a thing for retro executives. You know what? Almost a year ago now, we saw Howard Schultz come back as interim chairman of Starbucks after the departure of Kevin Johnson. Starbucks, as we tell Investing Club members, has a new CEO now, Laxman Narasimhan, and I think he's going to do a good job. I can't wait to spend some time with him. But Howard had to come back as interim CEO to get things the way it should be. Now, this retro CEO storyline has only become more germane of late. We've seen three separate companies, Disney, Stitch Fix, and World Wrestling Entertainment, be involved in just these kinds of reshufflings. Let's take them one by one, because these stories can tell us a lot about how you can create a comeback at a flailing business. We'll start with Disney, because I'm a longtime fan of this one, to the point where we still own it for the Chattel Trust, as you know from the top of the show. In late November, Disney ousted CEO Bob Chapek after less than 3 years in the job. They replaced him with his predecessor, Bob Iger, the guy who transformed the company into a true powerhouse during his original tenure from 2005 to 2020, but also made that terrible acquisition, Fox. Now, I got to say, the worst mistake Iger ever made, though, was picking Chapek as his successor. We gave this guy so many chances. Sure, Chapek was dealt a tough hand, given that he took over just as COVID exploded worldwide. But for his last 20 months as CEO, the stock lost 55% of its value. And that was a good deal of it was because of his mismanagement. Chapek used to run the parks division. He was very good at that. But his skill set clearly didn't translate to the media side of the business, and that did matter. Chapek never really managed to put together a compelling narrative to own the stock. When he took over, Disney Plus had just gotten going, and the stock quickly started trading like a streaming video play, which was terrific at the height of the pandemic. But, well, you know, it's been awful since the world went back to normal post-COVID. Even though Disney's theme parks were packed and posting great numbers, even though this company's got some of the best entertainment franchises in human history, at least in terms of earnings power, Chapek could never get investors to focus on the underlying value because he couldn't bring it out. Now, the straw that broke the camel's back was that last conference call. Holy cow. In early November, when Disney reported awful numbers, but Chapek made it sound like everything was, well, I was going to say fine, but really fantastic, I think is the right word. Close watchers of the show know I had high hopes for Chapek, but now I'm glad he's gone, and I'm glad they brought Iger in his replacement, because this is a Hollywood company, and he understands Hollywood better than anybody. Of course, Iger's not infallible. He picked a bad successor, and almost as bad, as I mentioned, he massively overpaid for 21st Century Fox Entertainment assets, loading Disney's balance sheet up with a massive amount of debt, and only forcing them to suspend the dividend indefinitely. This was a long-time dividend payer. And like I mentioned at the top of the show yesterday, acclaimed activist investor Nelson Peltz launched a formal campaign for a board seat here. I'm dismayed that Disney's fighting this, but hopefully Peltz will win because he's one of the most reliable activists in the business. But we spent nearly half an hour talking to him this morning on Squawk on the Street. I thought he had a compelling vision for some of the things that need to be asked about. Yeah, he's got a great track record of unlocking value whenever he gets on the board. I think Peltz and Iger can make a terrific team if only Iger would get on board with the idea. Clearly, a lot of people agree with me because Disney stock jumped $3.50 today, and I bet it's got more room to run as long as Peltz gets on that board. Next up is Stitch Fix. Seems to be following the same playbook. Last Friday, the online fashion advisory service announced that its CEO, Elizabeth Spaulding, would be stepping down, but Katrina Lake, the founder, chairperson, and original CEO, and person who's been on the show a bunch of times, taking the helm in an interim capacity. Just like Disney, this move seems to be all about performance, or more accurately, underperformance. Because Stitch Fix became a real dog under Spaulding's tenure. Now, look again, a great deal of that's because this kind of a high-flying digital shopping play was a huge COVID winner that went totally out of style when the Fed declared war on inflation. Let me put it this way. When Katrina Lake announced she was stepping down in April of last year, the stock was in the 50s. Well, now it's at $4. And that's after bouncing hard over the past couple of weeks. I got nothing against Spaulding. I liked her when she was on the show. But under her leadership, Stitch Fix profitability plummeted. When this thing initially came public in 2017, it was profitable. By the 2022 fiscal year, which ended last July, they lost $1.90 per share. Now, there's some context here. Stitch Fix spent a fortune to expand from its core subscription offering, where you pay a monthly fee and get sent a box of clothes, into more of a classic online retail experience, but with personalized product recommendations. That kind of expansion is very expensive. Unfortunately, it came at a worst possible time because as of last year, Wall Street no longer wanted to invest in unprofitable companies that are spending heavily to invest in growth, especially e-commerce growth. Plus, with the launch of the retail business, Stitch Fix seemed to focus on the numbers for their core subscription offering started slipping. The subscriber count peaked a year ago. Worst of all, Stitch Fix has gone from pretty reliable operator to the exact opposite. They've missed sales estimates for three quarters straight. Again, a lot of this is timing. E-commerce cohort got killed. But can Katrina turn it around? Look, Stitch Fix is predicted to lose money for the foreseeable future. It is hard to call the stock cheap even here, down 96% from its highs. But at this point, the $478 million market capitalization is so low that it's tempting. The company has more than $100 million in cash and cash equivalents, zero debt. I think Lake can potentially sell the business to a larger retailer, maybe a private equity firm. But I wouldn't want to stick my neck out on Stitch Fix until they stabilize the core subscription business. The stock's just too speculative in an environment where speculation is going out of style. I will tell you personally, when I first met Katrina, she told me, do you know how much money the company's making? I thought it was losing money. I was wrong. I mean, it was an informal situation. She was telling me about what the company was doing. And you know what? What the heck was I thinking? She's a great operator. I think even having her back in an interim way could be terrific for shareholders. Finally, last Thursday night, we learned that Vince McMahon, the former CEO of World Wrestling Entertainment, who's owned a controlling stake in the business since the early 80s, would be returning to the company and possibly pursuing a sale of the business. This one raises eyebrows because McMahon technically retired last summer after some serious sexual misconduct allegations. But he never really left. He's the owner who shares most of the voting power. He brought in his daughter to run the show. But 2 days ago, WWE confirmed that he's coming back, and McMahon took the executive chairman spot, with the CEO title going to Nick Khan, who had been serving as co-CEO alongside McMahon's daughter. We've heard a lot of speculation about who might be willing to buy this one, although my squawk on the street compadre David Faber reports some serious cold water on these reports. My view, I don't want to go near the thing, and not just because the stock's already up 24% since the news broke. But you know what? I see it happening. And this is, let's see. So we got Starbucks, we got Disney, we got Stitch Fix, we got WWE. And I'm calling it a trend. Here's the bottom line. After a difficult period for the market, some companies are bringing back their old leaders to turn things around. But other than Bob Iger or Disney, I'm not sanguine yet about this strategy. Let's take some phone calls. Let's go to William in Michigan. William.
Hi, Jim. Thank you for taking my call.
Of course.
This stock is well off its highs. Many consider the company to be the leader and best of breed in the industry. Given the current macroeconomic conditions, I would like your opinion on Palo Alto Networks.
I think Palo Alto Networks is a buy. Now, we're starting to see some serious downgrades in the group. We saw some a trim in Zscaler. We saw some outright downgrade in Sentinel One. This is going to be this is the cream of the crop. And Nikesh Arora is the best CEO in that business. I say you buy Palo Alto Networks. Now let's go to Clay in Kentucky. Clay.
Jim, I'm a member of the investment club, and I always appreciate your insight. Coming into the new year,
fabulous.
I was thinking about adding it to my position in Humana. But I understand that maybe some Fed changes that could negatively impact the stock. What are your thoughts?
No. You buy Humana. This stock is part of a rotation. They actually pre-announced unbelievably good numbers when they were in San Francisco earlier this week. The trust owns it. As you know, thank you. We mentioned it. I also talked about it in our home stretch a little bit after 2:30, that I think Humana represents the best buy. We'll see United Healthcare tomorrow. I bet you it'll be good. And Humana is the one that's now the cheapest. After a difficult period for the market, some companies are bringing back their old leaders to turn things around. But other than Bob Iger, well, I'm not too sanguine about this strategy. Unless, of course, we do want to include Starbucks, which is from where, well, almost a year ago. Now, much more Mad Money ahead, including my exclusive with Dr. Eric Topol. Could an explosion of new COVID cases in China be cause for concern? Are we just whistling past the graveyard again? I'm going straight to the source for answers. Then I'm not buying that CPI number we got this morning, but why? I'll reveal exactly, and I'm telling you, I'm a little more rigorous than they are over at the Labor Department. And all your calls rapid fire in tonight's edition of the Lightning Round. So stay with Cramer. At this point, nearly 3 years after the pandemic reached our shores, we're more or less back to normal. Sure, we haven't eradicated COVID, but thanks to effective vaccines, widespread testing, multiple treatments, the virus is much less lethal. That said, there's a lingering threat here. Late last year, China shifted from its draconian zero COVID strategy to what I would say is a more laissez-faire anything-goes strategy, resulting in an explosion of new infections. Remember, the Chinese government insists on using homegrown vaccines that are much less effective than the mRNA vaccines from Pfizer or Moderna, so it's spreading like crazy. Now we have to worry about new variants showing up, especially because China hasn't exactly been forthcoming with information about the virus. How worried should we be? Well, let's catch up with Dr. Eric Topol. He's the world-renowned cardiologist turned founder and director of the Scripps Translational Institute. He's also a great friend of the show, who's become our most trusted source on COVID and many other health issues. Dr. Topol, welcome back to Mad Money.
Thanks so much, Jim. Great to be with you again.
All right. So, Doc, I read your opinion piece. That's why I wanted you on January 8th in the Washington Post. It's entitled, "The Coronavirus is Speaking. It's saying it's not done with us." I had others read this. They all said the same thing to me. Jim, you're a worrywart. You're a chicken little guy. And you know what? I remember I was in Milan in the last week of January in 2020. And I came home and I told everyone about this thing. No one believed me. I feel this article could be a clarion call that once again we're whistling past maybe not the biggest graveyard like we had, but something very important.
Yeah, the virus is relentless. And even though we're tired, Jim, it keeps finding new ways to hurt us. So the latest version is a fusion of two different variants, the so-called XBB, and then two mutations on top of that, that was discovered, first detected in New York, and it spread really fast throughout the Northeast and led to a pretty substantial wave of seniors getting COVID hospitalizations. It's probably going to become dominant throughout the country in the weeks ahead. So we have the first American-born major variant here. It unfortunately has a funky name, XBB.1.5, but it's not a good one. And it just shows us where the virus can go in such different ways that we would not have predicted to cause trouble.
All right. Well, I was in a medical building today. We're all wearing masks. I will go home tonight and I will test. I've mentioned this to other people. They laughed. When are we going to realize that it's around? And even if you've been fully vaccinated, there's a good chance that you could get this thing.
Right. Well, the vaccinations, unfortunately, ever since Omicron a year ago, don't do very well, and certainly only short term to help block infections. So you're absolutely right. The only way you're going to know when you've got exposed or when you're gathering, the tests do help. The rapid tests help to get a sense of what's going on. But yeah, our vaccines, they are really holding up well against the severe COVID, hospitalizations and deaths. But as of a year ago, the infection protection is really quite minimal. And so we have to keep that in mind. And the bivalent vaccine that was rolled out in September actually has done much better than we expected because it helps protect against this XBB.1.5 that we're dealing with right now. And that wasn't anticipated. That wasn't what the bivalent was directed to. So we got to use all the stuff we have, including the bivalent booster, the mask when we have high circulating virus, the testing, as you've mentioned. We've got a lot of things in our armamentarium to work with.
All right. So, Doug, we've got a country of 1.4 billion people that had an irrational policy about zero COVID and then went equally irrational and said, go see the world. A plane lands in Milan, 50% of the people have COVID. The variants of this petri dish of a country must concern you, and their ability to go anywhere with minimal restrictions must have you very worried.
Well, whenever you don't contain the virus, that's certainly the potential sequela, and we've got an American variant now because of that issue. So, yes, in China, with that massive population and really unmitigated spread at this point. They just weren't able to get the population vaccinated, particularly people of advanced age. As you mentioned at the top, the vaccines aren't working particularly well against these Omicron variants, as are the boosters that they have. So they're in a tough position. They were draconian because they didn't have facilities to match up with if COVID really spread. But now they're really seeing it, and it's taking its toll, and it's going to continue for many weeks ahead.
All right. So one last thing. If you haven't gotten that booster from September and you're watching this show, how about you go tomorrow to the drugstore and get it?
I sure think that would be a great idea, especially if you're older, 50 plus, certainly 65 plus, it gives you a lot more protection. Our immune system, as we get older, just doesn't do as well. And that booster, particularly the bivalent, is a big jump in your immune response to have neutralizing antibodies against the variants that we're seeing now, not just the ones that it was designed for.
Well, I'm so glad you came on, Doc. I think people are way too complacent. If it weren't for you, I think a lot of people would have gotten far more sick, and we would have saved more lives had people listened to you from the beginning. Dr. Eric Topol, founder and director of the Scripps Research Translational Institute and also a great friend of the show. Thank you, Doc. Great to have you on.
Thanks so much, Jim. Thanks for staying with us, too.
Absolutely. And money's back in.
Coming up, Kramer wants to hear from you. Your calls on the Thunderous Lightning Round. Next.
It is time. It's time for the Lightning Round. That's a wrap for Willie Sam. It's not to pop up like and then the lightning round is over. Are you ready, Steve? That's time for the lightning round, Kramer's money. Let's start with Galen in Illinois. Galen.
Hey, Jim. How you doing, sir?
I am doing great. How about you?
Pretty good. Just kind of hanging out here in Lewistown, Illinois.
Well, that sounds like a great place to be. What's up?
Yeah, it's a good place. What's your opinion on Rivian stock? What direction do you think this is going in the short term? Up or down?
Okay.
What do you think?
Rivian, I got to remember, we're against those companies that we're against the money losers, and we can't change our mind now. We just don't know what's going to happen. We're staying away from the losers. Let's go to Phil in California. Phil.
Hey there, Jim. Hey, gratitude, kudos, and appreciation for your work, and the depth of your analysis is getting deeper and better.
Oh, I got to work even harder, I tell you. I really, sometimes I get discouraged.
You're a master improving your trade. That's the
truth. All right, thank you.
High-yielding Israeli shipping company called Zim, Z as in zebra,
no,
I's
I've been
in
actually
India.
Dad on that one for about 35 points, and a lot of people said, Jim, you're keeping me out of a good one. I'm going to reiterate, I don't trust it, and I've been right so far. Let's go to David in South Carolina. David.
Jim, thank you so much for taking my call. It's an honor to be here and a privilege to say booyah to the Jimmy Chill.
Booyah, but the Chill says back. What's up?
Let's go. I just want to say I'm a founding club member, and you know, I really appreciate all your insights. So grateful for it.
Jesse, thank you. We got that. Hey, do you like the 2 o'clock home stretch? How about that thing, huh? That's coming together.
I love it. Yeah, it's
all
great.
Right.
So
let's go to work.
Today's call is about a fertilizer company. So with the war in Ukraine and Russia over the past year, you know, a huge supply of fertilizer, wheat, et cetera, has been lost to the world economy.
One third of it.
Yeah, I mean, are we going to see...
Yeah, that's why I like... Go, which one? Which one do you want to know about?
CF Industries. Just, I want to see if it's going to take off with demand.
I like CF. I like Bozak more. I like Bozak more, but I like CF a lot. Let's go to Steve in Minnesota. Steve.
Hi, Jim. Long-time viewer, first-time caller. Wanted to thank you for all your wisdom and expertise that you humbly share with us. My question has to do with supplier of the semiconductor industries. With the CHIPS Act recently passed and the manufacturer set for large capital investments, what do you think about the company Entegris? Ticker ENTG.
I like Entegris. It's very out of favor. It's got a little too high multiple, but it does a lot of the nuts and bolts that you need to make semi. So that's okay by me. I'm good with it. Let's go to Joe in New Jersey. Joe.
Hello, Mr. Kramer. Thank you for joining us.
Joe, what's
call.
Up? Absolutely.
I see that the healthcare products and service provider Henry Schein is off of its highs. Is it a buy?
I like the company. It's very plain vanilla. Nothing really exciting about it, but that's okay. We don't want to. We're not in this business in order for excitement. We're in for consistency, and Henry Schein's had a pretty consistent view. They deliver. Let's go to Tom in Texas. Tom.
Yes, Jim. I've been watching you since the Kudlow days, but first time.
Holy cow!
In.
Sol Larte look real good. What's going on?
You highlighted Clearfield a little while ago. The chart's kind of weak, so a fall back into the 80s yesterday didn't take me by surprise. But against the general background of the market the last 2 days, was kind of surprised by the depth of the fall into it.
Yeah,
hit 81.
You know what? I feel like, I know this sounds really like a cop out, Tom. I think somebody knows something. I see these things, and lately, since this year began, when you see a stock go down, you got to be very careful. We have to wait and see. We can't catch a falling knife. When there's so many stocks that are doing well, you have to stay away from the stocks that are plummeting. Let's go to Isaac in Indiana. Isaac.
Hey, how you doing, Mr. Kramer?
Mr. Kramer's doing fine. How about you?
All right. Hey, so do you think Steel Dynamics, STLD, is worth the buy?
I like Steel Dynamics, but I love Nucor. Nucor's been dead right, and that's the one you want to pull the trigger on even tomorrow. Bye, bye, bye. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is the conclusion of the Lightning Round.
The Lightning Round is sponsored by TD Ameritrade. Coming up, a key economic indicator is out. Why isn't Kramer buying the number? Find out next.
Now and then you get a big number that's simply not credible. That's how I feel about today's cooler than expected CPI reading. To me, these percentages either make no sense or are clearly out of date. Don't get me wrong, I'm glad to see the consumer price index going down. We need to win the fight against inflation. So it's encouraging to see the CPI down 0.1% month over month in December, or up just 6.5% year over year. That's a big deceleration from a few months ago. So what's the problem? Simple. I actually think this number is way too high. And inflation is running much lower than it indicates. We know the Labor Department gives you two sets of figures, the ones I mentioned, and the core numbers that exclude food and energy, which rose 0.3% in December. When you look at the underlying percentages, though, some of them are very hard to swallow. The Labor Department says there was a 4.5% decline in energy costs month over month. Yet natural gas, which happens to be the principal way people heat their homes in this country, was down 35% from the end of November to the end of last month. That's a crash. This is something that meaningfully lowers the cost of day-to-day life. Gasoline was down 9.4% month over month. That headline energy decline should be a lot bigger. Shelter's a big loser in the CPI, moving up 0.8% from the previous month. And I question that, too, based on real data from boots-on-the-ground companies, so to speak. Last night, KB Homes, a large national home builder, reported. And they're seeing dramatic declines in housing prices in some of the hottest regions, the ones we're most worried about when it comes to inflation. Austin had been the hottest in the country, but competitors are now cutting prices by 60, 70 grand. The average price for a KB home is about $500,000, so that's significant. Phoenix, been real hot. The prices have come down about 30 grand. Raleigh, North Carolina, huge influx of people from the north. Yet those prices are being reduced by 30 grand. Florida, the destination of choice for people fleeing high taxes in other states. But Orlando's prices are coming down by 60 to 70 grand. There's even discounting in Southern California's Inland Empire, which has been, once again, like in 2007, incredibly hot. So if all the hottest housing markets are seeing big price cuts, how the heck was the cost of shelter up 0.8% last month? But the craziest item in the CPI report is apparel, up 0.5%. Come on, Labor Department, get digitized. Right now, we're looking at one of the largest apparel gluts I've ever seen. And I come from a retail background with two parents who worked at department stores. You can walk down any of the discounters, TJ Maxx, Burlington, Ross Stores, and see all the most expensive clothes for a fraction of what you pay for them at the major chains. Why? Because the major chains had to dump this stuff on the discounters in order to make room for new merchandise. Oh, and let's not forget the miss by Macy's last Friday, where they had to discount apparel. But above all, let's listen. Think about this. 200 million people shop at Walmart, and there are more than 120 million cardholders at Costco. Both places keep prices down below where you can get the merchandise anywhere else. In short, apparel, it's a disaster. That the plus 0.5% increase is so off the mark is laughable. I can go on and on about how wrong these numbers are, but what matters is the vast preponderance of these CPI components are way too high versus what I'm hearing from individual companies that can give us cold, hard cash numbers. Those real numbers speak for themselves, and they're about to be real loud as earnings season gets rolling. Long story short, inflation's coming down, coming down hard. I just wish Jay Powell had the real numbers I just gave him. Because based on the reality, I think it'd be crazy for the Fed to hit us with anything more than 25 basis point rate hike at the next meeting. And if we get any progress on wage inflation after that, there's honestly no reason for the Fed to keep tightening at all. I like to say there's always a bull market somewhere. I promise you I'll find it just for you right here on Mad Money. I'm Jim Cramer. See you tomorrow.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you. Like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, package-less and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively FedEx.